Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Manapro, providing the best quality products for your animals for a value you can appreciate. Manapro, nurturing life. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author and national spokesperson for the USDA APHIS Biosecurity for Birds program. My co-host is poultry advocate and author Pat Foreman. Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, sustainable living, urban farming, and urban gardening. Each week, we welcome experts in their field from around the country to share their knowledge and teach us all about their field of specialty. Thanks to our wonderful sponsors, we have given away more chicken coops, more chicken-related prizes than anyone in the world, and we are home of the Chicken Coops for Classrooms contest. It is now time for another great episode, so sit back, enjoy the show, and we'll be back right after this short commercial break.
Manapro is committed to providing the best quality products that your animals deserve at a value you can appreciate. No matter the animal, no matter the product, you can be certain that Manapro cares as much about the well-being of your flock as you do. So try one of the many poultry products offered at a retailer near you. Manapro, nurturing life.
Manapro understands that poultry owners are as diverse as the birds they care for, which is why they offer both medicated and non-medicated starters. Whichever product you choose, you know you're getting great nutrition for your new chicks. Look for Manapro products at a retailer near you. Manapro, nurturing life.
You've ordered your new baby chicks and even have the brooder prepared, but now it's time to order that new chicken coop. My Amish Goods offers quality-built chicken coops for every size flock and budget. They have many styles and colors to choose from and will ship them fully assembled right to your front door. Act now and receive a special upgrade at no additional charge. Visit them online at myamishgoods.com. That's myamishgoods.com. Looking for something? Find it online at BidBird Auctions. BidBird.com is an online auction service that caters specifically to the poultry, waterfowl, game bird, and pigeon hobbyists. With so many rare and exciting species listed daily and in a wide variety of categories, you'll want to visit often. Join hundreds of the nation's top breeders that have made BidBird Auctions their new home. And get sold on BidBird.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It is now time to bring on my wonderful co-host, poultry advocate and author, the one, the only, Pat Borman. Hey, Pat, welcome to the show.
Hey, Whisper, it's good to be on the show. You're sounding pretty perky today. That's wonderful. Everything going okay?
Everything is going fabulous. For those that don't know, we are broadcasting live from the old farmhouse, which I'm very proud that is still here. After the storms we had last night, I'm very proud that it is still here. Jen and I, when we woke up this morning, we looked at each other and said, are we in Oz?
Yeah, are we in Oz?
we weren't sure. Oh, my goodness gracious. We followed it. We knew they were coming. Thanks for the great technology of Doppler radar and an internet connection. And so, because we don't have TV. And we watched it, and I anticipated, based on the radar, getting here about 3, but it got here about 1:30, and it lasted. It moved through very quickly, to be honest with you, very quickly. And but man, let me tell you, we were both surprised. We looked out the window, saw the sheets of rain coming through, saw the wind, and the house didn't move a budge. I mean, thank goodness it was. But we thought, my goodness, it's 111 years old, and here it is on pillars. And but hey, that says something. It's been here for 111 years, so we hope it's not going anywhere. But it was a little concerning seeing the wind and the storm come through. I know others weren't as lucky as we were. The window installers were supposed to be here today, but they can't get out, or one of them, the head dude, he can't get out of his neighborhood due to the fallen trees. He's up in Griffin area of Atlanta. But when I looked at the storm yesterday afternoon, Pat, it stretched literally. No breaks. I mean, it was one solid storm from Philadelphia all the way to Texas, and no breaks at all. It was amazing. What did you get up in your way in Virginia?
Oh, we got slammed. I mean, my house was creaking. I mean, your house was steady, but I could feel it sway a little bit. A couple of shingles came off the roof.
Uh-oh.
And we had a light show last night about 2:30 that rivaled any fireworks that anyone could ever put on.
Yeah.
And I talked with my mother in the Midwest. She's in Indiana. She called and warned me, it's coming. You can better look out, because their place is flooded here. They got a huge amounts of rain in a short amount of time and tornado warnings. She said, I have never seen anything like this in my entire 93 years. So it was a whopper. Severe weather on the whole East Coast.
Yeah, and 'tis the season. It is spring, and which means it's time for those spring storms. So this is the first one that's really passed through our way. I haven't, again, no TV, so I haven't really looked to see how many confirmed tornadoes there were in Georgia. We saw a lot that popped up in Alabama and Mississippi and Louisiana. And you know, those night storms are always the worst, because hard to predict. People are sleeping. They don't know what's coming. They don't know where to take cover. And so those ones that roll in after dark are the most dangerous ones. Saw a report yesterday that 2.5 more times people are killed during night storms than during daytime storms. Can't see them coming. You're asleep. Maybe you don't have the weather radio to automatically wake you up when the warnings are issued. So very, very dangerous. So we hope everybody, we have listeners all across the country. This whole storm wreaked havoc on half the country, so half our listeners were probably affected by it. So we hope that all of our listeners out there who were in the path of this massive storm were okay. Someone in the chat room, I think it was Brits and Grit, said it was 80 yesterday and it was snowing today. So truly amazing.
Yep.
It is a little nippy this morning here, even in the middle Georgia area, and so we'll probably have to turn the heat on tonight down to about 38, I think, here. So we'll just have to see. But I'm glad you weathered the storm good, Pat. I'm glad you're here with us today. We have a wonderful show, a very popular show, and it's The Heritage Chef. Steve Pope is going to be with us the first Tuesday of the month. Great topic today. It's basically preparing chicken historically over a hearth open flame and grill, kind of like you're out. So I'm definitely looking forward to this. So folks, you need to again pull out that spiral notebook we talk about here with Chicken Whisperer on it, and take all these great notes that we're going to have today during the radio show with Steve Pope. So we're looking forward to that. And then of course tomorrow we've got a tremendous show. Again, our first show coming back with the Garden Series on the first and third Wednesdays. It's Garden Wise Living with Arlena, and that's going to be tomorrow. So we're really looking forward to that. I talked with her on the radio show or on the phone last night, and we've got a great topic for tomorrow. It's going to be great. This Thursday, another great show, Poultry Today with Dr. McCray, and then another awesome Fun Friday. We have lots of prizes to give away again this Friday. So get again, next time you're at the dollar store, get that spiral notebook and take lots of notes, because that's what we do. We bring the experts in their field here on the show and teach us all about their expertise so we can learn more. So what it's all about, and have some fun as we do it there in the chat room, which is loaded today. Thank you very much, all you in the chat room. Just send a shout out as we go down. We got Big Bird, Brits and Grits. We got Dave's in there, Dibby's in there, Dibra's in there, Frugal Country Mom, a boatload of guests that want to learn all about cooking chicken historically over the open flame hearth and barbecue. We've got, as looks like, Jomanda. We've got Kevin's in there. We got Kara, Lucky Ridge Girl, Love for Poultry, Nightwalker. We've got Pat, Ralph, Red Hawk. Good to see you again, Red Hawk. Reed, S.A. Kim, Walter, and then some more guests in there as well. If you're a guest and would like to participate in the chat room, just have to register. It doesn't take but about 60 seconds to register. You'll get your own creative screen name like the rest of us have over there. Then you can actually participate in the chat and not just observe the chat. And let me tell you, a lot of great, great, great friendships have been made through the chat room all across this great land. So do that, participate, and I'm sure you'll meet some good friends as well. So as we continue host chat, it's Tuesday, no show yesterday. We were getting all kicked up to be able to broadcast. And what did you do over the weekend, Pat? Anything egg-exciting?
Oh, it was. It was so doggone exciting. I went to the National Agility Dog Trials held by the American Kennel Club here at the Horse Center. And there were over 1,000 dogs at the Horse Center. All you saw were dogs everywhere, dogs and their loving owners and dogs loving their owners and owners loving their dogs. It was so heartfelt, Whisper. And those have you ever seen an agility competition?
We have not. Other than on TV, we have not.
Yeah, well, it's intense, and it is so much fun. They had dogs everywhere from little rat terriers, and there was one little rat terrier. He shouldn't have been named Bullet. I've never seen anything go so fast with that short of little legs. Clear up to older dogs. They have what's called a preferred classing, where older and dogs with special needs or whatever can still compete. And so I think the oldest dog they had there competing was a 13-year-old lab. And he was smiling all the way. He went through the weave and up over these tall things and up over the jumps. It was absolutely heart-rending and heartwarming. So the competition was so intense. And our dear friends from the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy were there, Brian and Michelle Brain. And Brian made it to the finals. It was so exciting, and competed in the very last trial runoffs, I guess you call them, of the finals. So that added an extra special thing, knowing someone that was competing in the classes, and then also giving me tips on what the handlers were doing, because there's a whole body language with it, and everyone has their own little special tips, tricks, and traps. So I spent most of Sunday there, and it was absolutely just wonderful. I felt like I'd had a month vacation. So that was a highlight of my weekend. How was yours, besides getting down to your new homestead?
Yeah, it was nice, and that's what it was all about. We had a really good time. My sinuses, boy, the allergies here, not down here at the farm, but in Atlanta, really started working on me. Of course, the left eye waters anywhere with the Bell's palsy, but you wouldn't known it because the allergies finally caught up with me. All of this pollen coming out of the trees down here in the South, good old Georgia. And so it caught up with me. So about 3 or 4 days, I was dealing with the snifflies and the sneezies and whatnot due to the pollen. But that seemed to have cleared up thanks to my good friend Benadryl.
That's Ben Adril, right?
Ben Adril,
your good friend Ben Adril.
Exactly, yep. Great friend of mine, and especially during allergy season. So we worked through that, but we've had a really good time, and we're going to be here. It's Jen's spring break, so we're here all week, and her parents are coming down to spend the weekend with us as well. So looking forward to that. But we got more, even more exciting than that. Great radio show programming for all of us and all of our listeners through all the week. And today is no exception. Remember, Steve Pope, the Heritage Chef, will be here today. We can go ahead and get kind of started with some chickens in the news. And this is one of the most popular segments. Everybody says, oh, I just love to hear all this different chickens in the news that you share. Some it's funny, some it's sad, some it's entertaining, some it just darn tooting just ruffles my feathers. And so I'm going to, get over here to our, I hadn't posted any on Facebook today, but there's a few that we can share with you. And Pat, do you have any chickens in the news today on this Tuesday afternoon?
I do. I've got her. Can I go ahead and let me just go ahead and start off?
Please do. Yes,
so,
ma'am.
Hot. This is what we've been looking for, Whisper. This comes from the HuffPost Green, and it's written by David Kirby. And the title of the article is Arsenic in Chicken Feed, a Possible Cancer Cluster Source? Is arsenic in chicken feed a possible cancer cluster source? So here's the data that we've been looking for. You know, we've been tracing this cancer thing, gosh, ever since over 2 years, I think, about it's been coming more and more in the news. So here's what they say. It says arsenic from industrial chicken manure is a possible source of cancer cluster identified in Arkansas. And for those that don't know, a cancer cluster is an epidemiological term where you've got a cluster of extremely high number of a certain disease showing in any one little group or pattern or population. So they've got a cancer cluster in Arkansas. And this is a report that was featured at the Senate Environmental Committee hearing on Tuesday, which is last Tuesday. And the report is titled Cancer Clusters, Disease, and the Need to Protect People from Toxic Chemicals. And it identifies at least 42 disease clusters in 13 states that have been reported since 1976. Of course, it calls for better documentation and more studies of the disease clusters, and also, of course, for stricter control over toxic chemicals through the changes in the Toxic Substances Control Act. So what this report now is co-written by the National Resources Defense Council and National Disease Clusters Alliance. And what they're saying is that one of the clusters identified was in the quiet little town of Little Prairie Grove in northwest Arkansas, where a testicular cancer cluster was identified between 1997 and 2001 among three 14-year-old boys. So these young boys are getting testicular cancer. Although no cause was identified, the town of only 2,500 people lies as close to, this is an interesting one, a now-closed nuclear reactor, a low-level radioactive landfill, and a poultry plant, and a manufacturer of poultry feed that contains arsenic. So, dang, talk about location, location, location. You've got it all there. So the local residents were concerned that the poultry facilities were contributing to the high rates of cancer and other health problems because of the arsenic-contaminated chicken manure, which, of course, is used as fertilizer and spread all around the fields that's just outside the schools and the homes in Prairie Grove. And in 2004, one resident sued the poultry farm and the feed manufacturer, and the report noted, quote, the courts did not rule in favor of the residents, and the true cause of the cluster cancer has never been determined. So the courts just said no, and that was kind of the end of it, even though they've got these severe health problems. So now the author, David Kirby, spent 5 days in Prairie Grove. He's writing a book called Animal Factory, and, of course, the town's filled with great, great people, but they've had so many sad experiences, and he says that some of the saddest that he's had in his 20 years of journalism. Because in this one tiny town of 2,500 people, there have been at least 21 documented cases of pediatric cancer and many more cases among adults. And many of them have died. what apparently there's leukemia in so many houses. They were walking down the street and they were saying that house had leukemia, that girl died of brain cancer in that house, there's lymphoma over there, skin cancer over there. And as he was walking through the town, just about every other house or so had some sort of a health problem that they knew about or had died from these different diseases. So pretty much all the families there, they're blaming it on the arsenic in the industrial chicken feed that is dry spread onto nearby croplands, of course. And then, but then when it gets wet, that's when it converts into the toxic arsenic form. So this goes on and on and on. But what I'm going to do is just kind of summarize the past. He says they're talking about Roxrosone. They name Roxrosone. Mm-hmm. It's made with organic arsenic, which is less toxic than the inorganic arsenic. But they're both known carcinogens. However, what they found is certain bacteria in the soil and in the chicken guts convert the metal from the less toxic form to the toxic form. And even so, the state of Arkansas says there's no cancer cluster in Prairie Grove. And the judges in Arkansas have not been convinced that Roxrosone caused any of the cancer or other causes of disease that are there. So there's probably going to be a lot more lawsuits coming up. So it goes on to say that arsenic exposures have consistently shown to increase lung cancer risk. And some studies suggest that there's also risk for other cancers, including skin cancer, stomach cancer, kidneys, leukemia, lymphomas, and the list kind of goes on and on. And they've even found problems with bladders, kidneys, lungs, skin, and, of course, colon and liver. So it's pretty much of a bad thing. So here's how it ends. I like this last paragraph. It says, chicken, meaning chicken meat, is cheaper when they use these methods, meaning Roxrosone, but the treatment for the illness is not cheap. Cheap chicken cannot possibly offset the cost of treating a certain kind of disease. The reduced cost does not outweigh the value of someone's health or their life. How can we have really saved? It would have taken years of eating low-cost arsenic-loaded chicken to save anything on my hospital bills, which, of course, are astronomical. So that's the first time that I know of, anyway, Whisper, that we've come across with cancer clusters and actually relating those then to arsenic in the groundwater and in the fields that grow their food. So it's getting hotter. Cancer,
it is.
Arsenic is coming out. The data are coming out more and more, and here we go. So
stay tuned.
I'm sure there'll be more next week and week after.
We're allowing you to keep us posted regarding that subject. You're all over it and bring us the most up-to-date. So we appreciate that because it should be concerning to all of us regarding our food source. So thank you. Thank you very much for that. My Chickens of the News segment here comes to us from the Great Falls Tribune. The Great Falls Tribune, greatfallstribune.com. Compromise aims to mute squawking over urban chickens. Compromise aims to mute squawking over urban chickens. Comes to us from Richard Ecke, Tribune staff writer. In Great Falls City, Commissioner Bill Bronson might be aptly dubbed the Great Compromiser. When a thorny issue hits the city commission chambers, Bronson often comes up with different language that may save the day or reduce opposition to city action. But will Bronson, an attorney, be able to help engineer a compromise on the latest chicken difficulty, whether to allow more chickens in city limits? Bronson has come up with four compromise proposals that would alter the city's controversial chicken ordinance proposal. The ordinance would allow more people in the city's residential areas to keep up to 6 hens in fenced yards, subject to various conditions. In an interview Monday, Bronson said he thinks the proposed ordinance, as written, already might be the most restrictive among the state's cities that allow chickens. Bronson penned 4 proposed changes that might make the issue more palatable to some of the plan's critics. Okay, the 4 options include... Okay, let me just make sure I've got my restraints on, because some of this is just really ruffles my feathers. Requiring people who want chickens in their yards to get permission from immediate neighbors, similar to the way people must obtain home occupation licenses in the city. Bronson said one problem with that approach is how to define immediate neighbors, who is truly an adjacent property owner. he asked. Okay. Again, we say this every time this comes up. Do you have to get permission from your neighbors to have loud, noisy, and obnoxious kids running around the neighborhood? Nope. Do you have to get your neighbor's permission to have a big old loud Harley Davidson you may crank up at 11 at night? No. So, you know, the list goes on. So why
you don't,
are we
you forgot
just
the pit bulls, Whisper. Don't forget the pit bulls.
Yeah, the pit bulls. Yeah, do you have to have a neighbor to have that barking dog in the backyard that's going to annoy you all night long, barking at whatever it may be? So, yeah, perfect opportunity to fight that. Next, installing a nuisance provision. So if chickens cause problems at a property, authorities can take steps to revoke the owner's permit and boot the chickens. Okay, do they have that for dogs and cats and kids and people and motorcycles and motorhomes and anything else that might cause a problem? You know, if they look at the laws they already have in place, which I don't know, there may be, you know, hello, there's probably and more likely more laws already on the books that would deal with any problem that they would have with chickens. Preaching to the choir, folks. Okay, next. Prohibiting chicken owners from slaughtering their chickens in public view, a clause that is in place in the city of Bozeman. Now, I'll give them credit for this where credit is due. Many towns across America that allow backyard poultry completely ban butchering at all, even if it's done inside your house. How they'd ever know, who knows how that. But at least here, they're not banning the butchering and culling of chickens for food. You just can't do it in public view. And then adding a requirement that a, let's see, chicken owner would have to notify all adjacent property owners before obtaining a chicken permit. Doesn't say says you have to get permission, but now it says you have to notify them. The part about getting permission from neighbors probably would not help pro-chicken activists Cheryl Reichert and Charles Bocock. Probably will not help them get their chickens back returned from exile. If the neighborhood approved clause passed, they may not be able to get approval from enough neighbors in the sharply divided Prospect Heights area of Great Falls. The couple proposed allowing more chickens in the city more than a year ago, he said. Let's see, he also plans to suggest not allowing chickens in more densely populated residential areas zoned R5 and R6. Chickens at the moment are only allowed in R1. Don't have the specifics of what that means. It may be based on lot size. He said he was disappointed someone anonymously circulated a goldenrod-colored piece of paper in the Fox Farm area over the weekend urging people to tell commissioners they do not want to live in a barnyard. Okay, tell them you don't want chickens, the flyer urged. He said the flyer was full of misinformation. How about that? Full of misinformation, including an assertion that city commissioners introduced the ordinance change when it was proposed by private residents. He also said the flyer left the impression that anyone in the city could keep chickens if desired, which would not be the case. And, of course, a large crowd is expected at the meeting that will probably last at least several hours, beginning at 7 p.m. So there you have it. And we'll see what happens there. And, of course, we hope that they fight that issue with the getting neighbors permission, because, if you're going to do it for chickens, let's do it for kids and Harleys and dogs and cats and everything else that you might have. So, oh, my neighbor has a red dress on. I can't stand the color red, so we need to ban red dresses in the neighborhood. Got to ban it.
Oh, dear. Yeah, well, there you go. It's just a phase, Whisper. It will pass. It's just a phase. It's kind of like the growing pains of people understanding the charm of chickens. So,
yep.
Okay. Anyway, yeah.
All righty. Let's see. It's exactly a half past the hour, and we're going to go ahead and take our commercial break here, and when we come back, it, of course, will be time to bring on our special guest today, the Heritage Chef, Steve Pope. And again, today he's going to be teaching us all about historically preparing chickens over a hearth, open flame, and say backyard barbecue, a campsite fire. How cool is that? So make sure you get that pen and paper together, because when we come back, we will be welcoming Steve Pope, the Heritage Chef, to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Stay with us, folks. We'll be back right after this short break.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust. Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at EggCartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's EggCartons.com.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Many of you know there was no radio show yesterday due to some technical difficulties. So even though we did post yesterday's secret password on our Facebook and Twitter page, just in case you don't do Facebook or Twitter, just to be fair for everybody, we want to make sure everybody's happy and has a fair chance of winning this awesome chicken coop from critter-cages.com. Yesterday's secret password was egg. How creative is that? Yesterday's secret password was egg, and sometime during today's show, we will be issuing another secret password for today, and of course, that will be posted on our Facebook and Twitter pages a little later. And again, this is all for the password collection for Poultry Protection Chicken Coop Contest by Critter-Cages.com, just got to collect those passwords, and then on the last day, you got to be that right caller and recite those passwords, and you'll win this awesome chicken coop. Also going on right now is the Chicken Coop for Classrooms contest, and we talked about that last week, but if you're a first-time listener, it's awesome. Anywhere in the lower 48 states of this great land, we are giving away an awesome prize package to either a public or private school. We just got done with one. We had an awesome Chicken Coop for Classrooms contest, and a school up in Missouri, the college school in Missouri, won. And this time, all you have to do to nominate, very simple. Send us an email to contest@chickenwhisperer.net. contest@chickenwhisperer.net. We need the school's name, the school's address, the school's principal. We need your contact information as the nominee, or nominee-er. So the school's information, address, phone number, principal name. We need your information since you're nominating the school. And then a short paragraph of why you think that school is worthy of this awesome grand prize. We'll have a panel that'll choose, and we'll narrow it down, and then we'll choose the winner. We'll have some finalists like we did last time, five top finalists, and then we'll choose the top winner. And schools that really are already showing a real devotion to more sustainable school life, raised bed gardens, compost bin, a healthy school lunch program. Are they already hatching out chicks? Do they have a greenhouse? Things like that. Do they have a solar panel set up? Different things like that will probably be closer to the top of the list because they're already showing that. But if you're just getting started, go ahead and nominate that school too, because this would help them out, continue down that pathway of becoming more sustainable as a school, and how they can educate all the kids and all the teachers and all the parents and all the community with these great prizes. Again, a dozen hatching eggs from eggcartons.com, an awesome incubator from our good friends at Brency.com, a brooder kit so they can brooder the chicks for a while, from Critter-Cages.com, an incredible chicken coop from Ware Manufacturing, and then books from both myself, Pat Foreman, and Christine Heinrich. Chicken Coops for Classrooms started right here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. We're very proud to do that for our great, great sponsors. All righty, it's now time for to welcome our wonderful guest, first Tuesday of the month, the Heritage Chef, Steve Pope. Welcome back, Steve. It's so great to have you on the show again.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Gee, I've been listening to everything we've been talking about for the past 30 minutes or so, and such great subject matter that you guys talk about because it's so universal. I know we work with the poultry realm, but so much of it is just pretty much universal. It's good stuff. Pat, I want you to name your next book, The Charm of Chicken. I think that...
Yes, they do have charm, don't they?
The name itself just rings true, whether you're cooking or raising, it's still the charm of chicken. And, you know, that kind of is a little bit of a segue of going into what has happened with the point of making changes in life. And some people don't adapt to change fast. Other people jump right on the boat. And it's really interesting how we sometimes have to woo people into change and help them to see the better way or the better way of doing things. But today I'm going to talk about the old way of doing things and to see how that progress has changed. So let me go, first of all, mention that I was in Asheville area, North Carolina, mm-hmm. and had a wonderful experience with Jim Adkins. And I think Jim comes on the show occasionally. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yep, been on the show.
Well, we did an educational seminar there for cooking as well as nutrition, cooking techniques, and it really was a great success. And a lot of the people attending that were not only chefs, but they were growers or people that were interested in marketing their birds, but not on a large scale, maybe just to different food places such as a restaurant or a open-air market, things of that nature. So there was a great interest, and we felt that if they didn't know how to cook them, they can't sell them as easy either. And that turned out to be such a really great experience. And I'll be going back in there into November, I believe I'm there, again for another experience. Hearth cooking. Gee, have either of you ever cooked on an open hearth?
I have, yep.
Yeah, I figured, Pat, I figured you would, that's for sure. and one of the things, it's almost way back in time, caveman-oriented in many of the thinking of, about cooking with open hearth. But a lot of people don't really realize or know that when they go into the kitchen and they turn on their stove with that electricity or a gas stove, that everything is automatically set up. They've got timers. They've got all the magic stuff that makes that stove work. Well, that stove has really only been in existence and actually common with a little more than 100 years. Now, we're talking about centuries of cooking here, but just about 100 years is what we have with the stove. And what did we do before that? Well, we used open hearth cooking, and that has caused a great change in our society. For one main thing, I can tell you when I was growing up, and you guys can, you know, chime in here. When I was growing up, what was the main area of the house that everybody congregated in?
The kitchen.
Yeah.
Always.
Always the kitchen. That's where the food was. That's where the discussions were. That's where dinners quite often were served. And, again, that was usually where the people of the house came into the house. It came into the kitchen first. So that became a meeting house with itself. And during that time, because cooking was a different process, people would cook pretty much all day or something would be cooking on the hearth and letting it simmer or baste or roast while it was on the hearth. And because someone was there, they could handle it by turning it or basting it again, things of that nature. So you really had an environment where that lent itself to community, if you will. And we've kind of missed that a lot in our cooking today, as well as a family fellowship of gathering around the dinner table. But people that did that really seemed to have a connection, and it started out very rural, and people did it in the cities also. So it was a part of an activity until the stove manufacturers decided that it was unhealthy to cook that way and it was too inconvenient. And so by the end of that period of time of the late 19th century, people were starting to look at what was available for other ways of cooking. Well, with that, we lost a couple of people, and a couple of ways of doing things. So that made it a little bit different. They said when the change is that the people, again, there was that resistance of not wanting to use stoves because food tasted stovey, is what they called it. They tasted stovey, and they said it had flavors that they weren't used to using because of the metal and the atmosphere of the regular stove. So, and I kind of tune that into the same thing as what we look at with microwaves. Now, I can tell you very clearly, I remember my family's first microwave.
I do, too. In fact, it was Christmas morning, and my dad put an egg in it, and it exploded, and the whole house stank to high heaven for 3 days. It was the horriblest smell I've ever heard. And I also want to share with you something else that was awesome. My dad's aunt cooked on a wood stove forever, all her life. And she had a cookbook that she had developed over the years. He has no idea where it is, but he definitely remembers it because it comes up in stories a lot, where she would have basically trying to fine-tune the temperature, at least for her stove, whether it be a cake or a roast or biscuits or whatever that she was cooking in the stove. She had a cookbook that would fine-tune to basically how many pine cones to use.
Yeah.
I guess whatever wood, but then add 9 pine cones or 6 pine cones or 2 pine cones to make that temperature so accurate based on what she was cooking. I thought that was fascinating based on each recipe had its own number of pine cones to cook with.
And to go into sync with that, it really is very true that the woods, the cooking woods, were always selected. If they were available, they would use certain hardwoods that would burn at a smoother, less fast pace, such as your hickory and hard maple. Dogwood would be one of them. And with that, again, you're 110% correct. They had it down to an absolute art. Today we walk in, we open the package, put it in the microwave, and that's our artistic endeavor in cooking. And at one time, that is what was considered an extreme art. as far as being able to create that. My mom, same thing, wood stove, living out in the country in Missouri, and I do know that she would do the cast iron dance on the top of it. She'd move the food to the back to let it simmer, to the front to let it fry, over to the right to let it, you know, just bubble and boil or whatever she's wanting. And she had that skillet in four different places when she was cooking. It wasn't just in one spot. Pat, do you find that's true when you're doing your cooking on your stove?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's no question. That's always the dirtiest part of the stove, too, that I have to clean most often.
But again, it was a shuffle, and you move things around, and it made it so much better. Well, you know, my first experience with the microwave was simply this we made cupcakes. I remember my mom made cupcakes because you could actually watch them rise and cook and through the little screen. And, you know, I can't tell you the disappointment when I tasted it, because it was magic. It was the same recipe that she'd always used, but boy, was there things missing. And so we've had, you know, we've tried different methods of using microwaves with the convection oven in there also, and a roaster in there, and five or six combinations. But it really doesn't mimic clearly enough the simplistic point of open hearth cooking. It is a whole different process and a whole different way of doing things. Again, you're moving coals around. You're creating heat and the process of those heats. One of the things that I want to talk just briefly about is the difference between roasted and baked meats. Now, roast chicken is a lightly caramelized crust on it. It has a very juicy interior, and it has a very intense, what we call meaty flavor. Certainly not wild flavor, but a very meaty flavor. And the reason why that is it can only happen when you're doing it with direct open fire or heat. Now, I have a couple of rotisserie cookers that I use that are open-faced, and they're part of the old systems that they used to have out there, which is wonderful. And it does somewhat the same thing. It does not have the smoke. It's just through electric. But it does that slow roasting, and that's part of what you see at the grocery stores when they're roasting theirs. You can only get that by doing an open fire heat to get the true caramelized crust. Now, what we do today is that we will bake in an uncovered oven. And that's what we often call as roasted chicken, which is not. It's just baked chicken, even if you brown it beforehand or brown it after for the last 30 minutes or 15 minutes, it's still considered baked. So you really have to understand when you're roasting something, it has to be direct flame, and the methodology that's used is either rotisserie or facing the flame in one way or another and moving it around so that it gets different areas covered. But it is, and the other point is basting it in its own drippings. And I personally, you know, I cook with so many different spices and herbs and all the wonderful flavors that go with that. But if I'm truthfully and honest about it, there is nothing like a roasted chicken or any of the meats that has been cooked on an open fire with simply salt and pepper. It has its own unbelievably natural flavor, and that's the very thing that we would look at.
I'm telling you, firsthand, I do the cooking in our house. Jen helps out a lot. But out of all the things I've ever cooked in my life, to be honest, chicken seems to be really, and you're going to say, oh, it doesn't have to be, I'm sure, but it seems for me the hardest, whether it's cooking on the grill, cooking in the oven, to make sure it's not, number one, dry as a bone, and then two, you know, cooking on the grill, with if you're not doing boneless, like chicken, you know, legs or thigh quarters, then it just for me, it's so difficult because, you know, the outside will be black and the inside will still be runny with
right. And here's part of the process of that, and I'm glad that you brought that up, because it is it's like dancing with the chicken. You go forward, you go back, you go to the side, the different type of things. The first thing I do when I'm roasting the chicken, whether it's in a barbecue pit or whether it's in another method of roasting, and I do have a fireplace that I do roast with, is that I make sure that I seal that chicken first, which means I get a good fast brown on it. Not black, fast brown. Then I pull it away And then I settle back and let it slowly roast. A lot of people will get that too dark too fast, and you end up with that burnt chicken. And like you say, you've got this unfinished oozing blood, as I say, coming out of it, which is certainly not appetizing, much less healthy,
yes.
Or safe as far as good safety. But and that can be very disappointing. So the answer behind that really has, whether it's on a barbecue pit or whether it's otherwise, is that you make sure that you seal that chicken by roasting it and turning it just enough to get a good glaze on the chicken. It does not have to be fully cooked, doesn't have to be browned. But what you're doing is, once again, you're sealing the outside of that chicken so those juices cannot escape, and yet you're going to give it enough time for it to slowly roast.
So it sounds like two issues. Number one, is there any basting necessary when you're doing that kind of sealing the chicken? Any basting necessary? And two, it sounds like one of the biggest keys is patience and time.
Yes. You know, if you're outside roasting and working with a barbecue pit, you're supposed to be relaxing anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So you should sit down and have your favorite libation and sit and just sit around and stare at the sky or something and make use of that relaxation time. It's something we don't do enough of to begin with. The other part of that is in the basting. Now, I'm a purist. And,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of people really say, what are you talking about? This is that or not as healthy. Well, people have eaten for centuries. And I actually use lard when
yeah.
I baste. A lot of people say, well, why don't you just use olive oil or a monosaturated, mm-hmm. that type of thing. If I'm going to be true to that particular event, that doesn't mean that I'm not going to be careful with other food and nutrition in that area. But if I'm going to make that special event, I will take good old-fashioned lard, and I will baste that chicken, or I will coat the chicken firsthand before I even, you know, do anything, and put it in there to get that nice crisp glaze on it. And there's nothing better as far as the taste. Nothing it can compare to that. And that's why they used to do larding to keep the white meat from burning too fast, things of that nature, using pork of some nature, whether it was bacon or jowls or whatever, to cover that breast area so that it didn't cook too fast. But the idea behind that is when you do that with the lard, and it's not expensive, and it imparts enough of that flavor, but it does another thing. It seals very fast. Lard will fry faster than anything. So it just really gets that coat on there and covers it well enough that once you've sealed it, then you start your general roasting, and that is setting it back out of the flame or out of the way of the flame, so there's just a consistent, even heat rotating that bird. You'll find that it works very well, very well. Another thing is that I never stuff any of these birds. A lot of people will attempt to do a dressing of some nature. I don't when I'm doing open hearth work, because you're wanting that airflow to go in and around and to cook from the inside out also. And so that helps it when you're doing a slow idea of slow cooking, and that's part of it. It's just simply part of it. It, as they say, they seize the meat. We call it sear it now, but in the past they used to call seizing it itself. SEIZED is what they use. And it just then you have to reduce that heat. And again, we're back to that old adage of low and slow, and keeping that temperature down. Now, the interesting thing is that they talk about this, and I think that there's some truth. We've been very concerned about the internal temperatures and making sure that it reaches a certain temperature. My open-ended question, and I know there may be some people who not necessarily agree with this, but you know, how long did they do without a thermometer to register an internal temperature? Let's see. I want to say maybe centuries and centuries and centuries. And, you know, we now are very attuned into making sure that we do eat our food safely and that it's cooked within that 145 to 170 temperature range. But, you know, I know that it puts me in a different ballpark of people's thinking, but, you know, I find that when I open that chicken up and open the leg and see if it's expanded and if there's any juices flowing out of it, and if the meat is tender to touch and the pinkness is gone, that's how grandma did it. That's how her grandmother did it. And I think that is a part of that craft that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah. But you know what? It's funny. that it never fails, and so many people can relate to this, is that, you know, you eat something your mama cooked or maybe your grandma cooked, and it's fabulous. And you try to replicate that, and it's not anywhere close. And even, it's so funny, even if your mom or your aunt or your grandma is standing right next to you showing you exactly how to do it, it still doesn't taste near as good as mama
or
grandma.
And I agree with that because, you know, mom had a few years of working with her own techniques and working that craft or that art work that she did in the kitchen. And it is very true. My mother could take a 3 or 4 potatoes, some onions, and a cast iron skillet, and I swear the same ingredients that I would cook with would be totally end up totally different. It's timing, it's method, it's technique, it's a way of arranging. It's just all of those things just seem to fall into place. And I think that comes true with the same thing when it comes to hearth cooking. You've got to practice. You've got to practice like anything else. I have yet to meet a surgeon that was able to take out appendix at the first try without having any training or any work prior to that. So it just seems to be that's the best way to identify as far as whether it's going to be good or not. And everybody has a recipe that was somebody else's, and you'll get some of the old folks say, yeah, well, it's the same ingredients, but that ain't how Aunt Martha used to make it.
Exactly.
So I certainly can appreciate looking at that. One of the things in timing, and this is one of the things about cooking with hearth, please don't misunderstand me. Use your temperature thermometers to gauge for that safety value. But when it comes to actual doneness and tenderness and the things that we look for, that should be a combination. And it's amazing because the timings that they used then, because they had direct heat as opposed to slow infiltration heat, they would roast a large chicken in 45 minutes. And to me, considering what I usually do, it seems like a very, very short amount of time. But it has that difference than us taking and roasting a chicken or a turkey for hours on end at exactly 350 degrees. So they learned, like you were saying earlier on, Whisper, as you were saying, that, you know, those pine cones, they had those techniques of moving those coals around and placing the fire at one end and roasting at the other end. All of that was a shuffle, and they learned that by continually practicing with their techniques. So it is part of that. Along with that comes a few things that they did use. They used cranes, what we call cranes. They're like a campfire triangle, and then it has an S-hook hanging from it, and you would hang a pot or something of that nature from it for cooking. And if you look at a lot of the old cast iron bakers or cookers, there's ridges around the top. And those ridges is where they would actually put coals on top of it, as well as putting it into the bottom area. So you would encapsulate those coals all the way around to get another even heating process. There's some things, I don't care what you do with modern science. I don't care how you process technique right up to Star Trek, and all you have to do is press a button and it replicates for you. there is nothing that can replace, even with the wood stove, not just open hearth, but wood stove, the actual smell of cooking bread. There's nothing. I don't care. I will stand on a soapbox forever on that one. There is nothing that has a better flavor to it, that has the rightness and puts that smile on the face. And the same thing with working with chickens or any of the poultry. If it's cooked in a very careful, old-fashioned way, you will find the antiquity of good taste that you're looking for. And it's fun, especially for the guys, to do the cooking with the open hearth. And in Texas, I used to go to a Fort Concho down there, and they used to have living replicas, and they would do cooking outside in the pits. And when I was in Hawaii, I went for the pit-roasted pig, where they would wrap the pig into the leaves, and I thought, well, that was pretty, until I really realized that the leaves were actually the moisture that helped steam the pork. So each one of those were techniques that were used, and always a lot of fun, but certainly a day-long project, and that's why they would cook up more and save a little back for the next meal. and things of that nature also. A lot of fun. A lot of fun to do.
Steve, you're saying that the leaves were a good thing because they helped keep the moisture, and that was a traditional form of cooking, right?
Yes, it was. The steaming, it's interesting what they would do. They would steam the pork, and literally in the pit, cover it up literally with the hot coals after it's been wrapped in the palm leaves and the large leaves, and that moisture from the leaves would insulate and cause a moisture to be infused into the meat itself. Then they would uncover it. And then there's also some things where they would actually brown it on a roast pit before they would put it in a dirt pit, so that you'd get a glaze on the pig too. So again, you're back to technique and taking the time to let those things happen. So again, using that very slow technique, even when you're doing an open hearth thing, not getting the bird too close to the fire and turning it, taking that time to let it work. Using drippings from the pan that you have with it, and basting it from time to time, you're going to come out on the right run, if you want to put it that way.
Right, Steve. I've got another question.
Sure.
I know I've been studying the nourishing traditions a little bit from the Weston A. Price Foundation, and
yes.
Of course they go on and on about the virtues of lard. Of course,
yes.
but all lard is not equal. But where do you get your lard from, and do you use a particular kind, or is it rendered in a certain way?
I tell you what, I get lard where I can get it because it's not as popular. There are a couple of places here in Kansas that are very Josh Weinland is one person who raises red wattle pigs, and they have some access. Our processing plant that processes our poultry does a lot of pork, so I can get actual pork meat, if you will, or
okay.
the fat
uh-huh.
to render. And I have been known to render it myself, work it through my sieves to make sure that I have rendered it very clean and clear. So
and how do you
a lot
do
of,
that?
Pardon?
How do you do that? How do you do your own rendering?
Well, first of all, you have to literally, what I do, and there's two or three different methods that you can do, but one of the ways that I do it is I boil the fat out.
Okay.
Which I use water, and then I let the fat rise, take it, let it congeal and rise to the top so it settles at the top. And then I break it off from the water, and then I go ahead and put it in a pan and heat it up again, and then I run it through a cheesecloth kind of thing, and it works very well, keeps very well as far as that. My favorite fat to use, period, is goose fat, but it's difficult to come by, and it's a little bit, like I say, it comes very scarce, and it can be very expensive to use. But if you ever have an opportunity to fry with goose fat, you'll see a tremendous difference in flavor also.
So lard not being created equal, so if I'm walking through the Piggly Wiggly, and I'm back there in the butter sector, whatever, and I see just this big square wrapped up just says lard,
yeah.
then you probably want to stay away from that?
Well, the one thing you need to look at is that sometimes they'll put preservatives into the commercial grade.
Ah.
And you do need to look at that because that or they would add certain, we just call them fillers to extend. But not so much in that as they might other fat products. The reason is because pork's fat is relatively cheap. The other part of that, which makes it difficult, and this goes back to the heritage of breeds versus your commercial grade of pork that they use, is the fat is not old enough, as well as it is not seasoned enough in development. So if you get young fat, it's kind of like not as rich in flavor that you might want it. So you're correct when you say all fats are not equal. I just think that quite often that lard, if you will, has gotten a bad name, and I think it's partially because they've attempted to use it for things that really is not as good. But things like larding and general cooking, it's not a monosaturated. It certainly has its components that if you have too much of it, it's not healthy. But just like anything else in life, moderation in all things is important. So it can be used very well for that, and it tends to hold the flavoring or complement the flavoring of whatever you're cooking. If it's good lard, if it's not, if it's been rendered properly, and it certainly if it has not been used over and over, you're going to have that lard enhance the flavor of the meat that you're cooking rather than change the taste of it where it does not taste like it should. So, and it's just another thing. They had a lot of lard in those days when they would do their work with their hogs and stuff, and they would use that as opposed to they did not run out in the field, take corn, process it into canola oil. They literally
yeah, that's right.
That would have been just a little bit out of the reach for them to do. So they used what they had, and that's part of understanding why the flavor is so good. It's a part of that component that makes a big difference. So.
Yeah. Okay, well, listen, Steve, this is all really, really interesting stuff. We need to take a commercial break here and honor our sponsors. So if we can do that, and then we'll come back and continue talking about heritage cooking. We're talking today with Steve Pope. He is the heritage chef, and we're talking about heritage cooking, so we'll be right back. Hold on, Steve.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com. Or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea. Technology you can trust.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
All righty. Thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And today, of course, it is the first Tuesday of the month, which means it's the Heritage Chef, Steve Pope. And today we're talking about open flame. Steve, it looks like we may have a couple of calls.
Certainly.
And I don't have time to screen them. So if they're not legitimate, then we'll just immediately mute them. But let's see if they may have some calls related to the topic that we're talking today. Caller calling in from area code 210. You're live on the air with the Heritage Chef. Do you have a question? Maybe they just called in to listen and pressed 1. But either way, no, thank you very much for calling in and listening to the show. We do have a lot of people that listen to the show, and a lot of times they'll press 1. So it looks like we may have a caller here from caller 620. You're on the air with the Heritage Chef.
Steve, this is Grover from Kansas. Yeah. I'm wondering, we find lard in the Spanish food aisle at our local grocery store. Would it be the same kind of lard?
There is one that's called Mataneya, and it's a company that does produce it for the Hispanic areas. And your 620 area, what is that? What city particularly? Hello?
Hmm. Yeah, let me go back over to the switchboard.
You may have hung up having asked the question.
maybe so.
Okay, well, that's all right. That's okay. It is true that a lot of times you'll see in the food specialty areas for ethnic foods, you'll find that the lard is in there. I prefer getting lard that is refrigerated. You can buy it that is in just standard blocks, if you will. But I just like the refrigerated. It seems safer. It obviously would be safe if they have it on the open shelf, because they're certainly not going to do anything against FDA law. But it's just a personal preference that I can do that. The reason why I say 620, that area is very close to us here in Kansas. And if I knew
Western
store,
Kansas, I think they said so, absolutely. Another,
yeah.
I have
a question about lard and just fat in general. I mean, it's a biological fact that many of the toxins are stored in fat,
yes.
Particularly pesticides and so all the fat-soluble kinds of bad things can tend to concentrate there. Do you have a source of organic lard, or is there any kind of testing that's done on lard these days, given all the scares that we have about the GMOs and what's being fed to commercial operations livestock?
Well, there are certain things that are retained in fat or fat-soluble processes, like in the human fat. However, the fat of specifically pork usually is not as problematic, if you want to use that. The other thing is that if you notice when I say I render my own, one of the things is I'm aware of is that the high heat will reduce any of the possibility of problems there. Quite often toxins are rendered out because of the intensity of the heat. And so that can make a big difference also. I have not checked with the local food organic food stores and stuff, but I would be quite certain that they would, if there's a demand for it, they would meet that. I'm not so sure if it's a matter of just being organic in the sense of what we call organic. It would also have to do with the processing company or whatever they may infuse into the lard, and so that would be another piece of it too.
That makes me
right.
Laugh.
Well, that's a really important point because uh-huh. a lot of times the processing will actually make it rancid so it lasts longer. I know that's a little bit of a contradiction, but that's what happens to a lot of the vegetable oils, so they have such long shelf lives.
That makes
Well, and part of that is they create those products, they being the manufacturers that create your newer oils and your composite oils. And if they do go bad, you got to stop and think, gee, everything does have a shelf life. I mean, it's even if it's still seemingly somewhat safe, my mother would not keep canned green beans over two seasons. She would just simply because even if it was they seemed fine and all that, she just would feed them to the birds and whatever, and they were happy and they got their food. But she just it was part of that practice of safety. So I'm my thought factor is that I try to use clean, holistic, healthy foods, and that does not mean that lard can't be a clean and healthy food. It's just gotten such a bad rap because of its high saturation factors. So and again, they used lard for everything at one time, making molasses cookies, everything you can think of.
Oh yeah.
So it wasn't just a frying process. It was
kinda
used for many other things also. So
kind of makes me giggle when you think about I'm cooking with lard, but by golly, it's organic, so it's good for me.
and we could get into another long conversation about what does organic really mean and how does it affect. And that in itself is a great piece of work. I have a quick recipe that I'd like to share because we're talking about open hearth, and I invite those that are really into trying new things to go ahead and attempt to do this open hearth process, even if not just for fun on their barbecue pit, take a chicken and do this because it's they will be surprised. If they're not able to do that, I will concede, and this is difficult for me to do, but I will concede and say go to the grocery store and get one of their roasted chickens, but because I would like for people to just try the process of this. Now, it's a pressed chicken, almost like a sliced loaf, and it's very simple to do. It's not complicated in the sense of technique or anything, but you want to take and you can do this with a boiled chicken also if you don't want to do the roasting. I prefer roasting because of the obvious, the flavor is phenomenal, and it brings out much more than just the roasting. But I usually take about a 3-pound chicken, and of course I'm going to say a heritage chicken, and that chicken you need to roast or to boil until it's, if you're boiling it out and cooking it, you just simply cook it in salt water with a little bit of pepper, maybe 1.5 teaspoons of salt with maybe 1/2 teaspoon of pepper, and you boil that until it's very soft, until the meat is basically falling off the bones. So you take and remove the skin and the bones off of the chicken if you're boiling it. If you are using a roasted chicken, leave the skin on. And what you're wanting to do is you're wanting to dice that into very small pieces. I mean, not little even tiny chunks, but very small pieces so that it's not really looks totally ground, but it's headed towards ground, looking ground. And one of the reasons why I say that is because you're also chopping up that skin. And as a quick side note, I had one of the gals that ate at our dinner in Asheville, and I purposely served thigh meat with the skin on. And because it was roasted properly and everything, she said this was the first time she had eaten skin, chicken skin, since she was, 10 years old. Because all the chicken skin that she's had in the past, it was, it's not good for you. It's too much fat, all that. With the heritage bird, you're cooking off so much of that fat that might have been there. Plus, it's much more healthier in that sense. So I chop the chicken up, and then I simply add about a tablespoon of vinegar. My grandmother was a little more liberal. She'd use maybe like 2 tablespoons of vinegar. And the vinegar is there to just work in some acidity, to peak some of the flavor. Then about 2.5 pints of chicken broth, and then about 2 tablespoons of clear gelatin. Now, if you were a purist, you'd be taking the chicken legs and be boiling them, and you would get your gelatin factor out of that. But we'll go ahead and just take 2 tablespoons of clear gelatin. And then here's where you add your own touch to it, maybe a half a cup of chopped pickles, or you can use dill pickles, sweet pickles, maybe some pimento chopped up, or a little red peppers if you want a little bit of heat to it, maybe one jalapeno chopped up very fine, remove the seeds. And what you do with that is simply put that in layers and into a mold, and make sure that you dissolve that gelatin in about half a cup of cold water. And you could use, if it's cold chicken broth, you could dissolve the gelatin into the chicken broth. And you add all that together, and then you pour it over the meat that you have in a gel, in a mold, or in a, even in a 9x12 or a loaf pan, such as a bread loaf pan. And you simply let that chill until it's solid. And there's 2 things that I've done with it, and I have fun with this because it's interesting to see people's reaction. I have served this as a hors d'oeuvre at a high-end dinner.
Ooh.
And on a very nice cracker. Simple, sliced, it's colorful, it's gelled, and believe it or not, they go, what is this wonderful, you know, this creation, they go on and on. And all it is grandma's old pressed chicken. So it's amazing. See, it's just grandma's old pressed chicken. I just put it on a cracker. But I will be truthful with you when I say that it is a great amount of flavor to it. It's a great thing for for warmer weather. Or you can do as they used to do, and that was obviously make it into a sandwich and have it as part of a sandwich. It's a great thing to do with leftover chicken, if you have leftover chicken bits and pieces to clean the carcass off with. And it's a great taste. And if you're able to do that with an open fire or open hearth recipe, using that particular technique, you're going to find the flavor of that pressed chicken is just phenomenal. It's a great taste, and it's easy to do. It's not complicated at all.
Yeah. I'd just like to add something about the skin of the chicken and the cholesterol,
yes.
that whole – I think what we as a culture have kind of become fat-phobic. But the truth is that some of those good high saturated fats, including the cholesterol, are absolutely necessary for our bodies to function normally, including our brains have a lot of cholesterol in them.
And the
sex hormones are all made out of cholesterol. So I think we've gone a little bit too far over the line about being the good healthy fats and the saturated the certain types of saturated fats phobic. Because we just need them. Without those, we can't have good skin. We can't think well. We can't, you know, have so many functions that the body requires. So
well,
people, please eat your organic fat from the chickens.
Yeah. Sure, and it's a lubricant that your body desires to make it run. It's a lot like the commercial chickens of today do not have. Basically, you will not find trace minerals that you will find in the old heritage breeds. And we require trace minerals in our system. We don't need a lot of it, but we need certain trace minerals to keep us running effectively. The other part of that, Pat, that I think is you'll probably agree with this, is simply we have become a nation of fast food that uses so much fat. And because we are, and I use these companies not to denigrate them, but simply to say they are out there. And when you're dealing with McDonald's, with Wendy's, with the people that have a lot of the fast foods that are deep fat fried and everything's coated and one thing or another, you're going to increase the cholesterol problems and the fat intake to begin with. And I think that's where the problem lies, not in a chicken.
And so many of those are vegetable
yes.
fats.
Yes.
They're not the animal source fats, which are totally different and rendered to a point where they're literally almost 100% rancid just going in to keep them so stable.
Right.
So all fats
right.
are not equal. I think that's really important for us to realize
yep.
that fat is not the enemy. It's the type of fat.
So
well,
bring on the lard.
Bring on the lard.
Bring on the butter. Absolutely.
We're definitely butter here, not that man-made, you know, butter. You know, they had to stop making butter, my understanding, in World War II, and then so they started
right.
making man-made junk and all chemicals that make it look and taste like butter. No, butter in this house. Yep, absolutely.
I tell you what, as a quick side note, I remember my mother. Now, this is really telling my age, but going back as a young kid of maybe 7 or 8 years old, my mother would buy margarine, if you want to call it that. It looked like shortening, and it came
yeah.
with a little food coloring pack. and you would actually put
that
food coloring and mix it in till you got the color of butter that you wanted. And so if you wanted a rich color of butter, you added a little bit more of the food coloring. And it was I look back at that, and probably, most likely, it was nothing but shortening with a little bit of food coloring to it.
That's
and
right.
So I just, again, that was at the advent of after the war, early 50s. Mm-hmm. They were starting to come back around. But I have a cow named Marissa, and she's a Jersey, and she has produced for me all the butter I need.
Aww.
And so, and there's nothing like Jersey fat butter. So, nothing.
Steve, we have got to run. We've got about 5 minutes left. We've got the chicken trivia contest to get done. What an awesome show, folks. Share it with your friends. Listen to the archive if you need more information. And definitely go to Steve's website, heritagechef.com, heritagechef.com. Tons more recipes there, lots of information about our friend Steve, and he is here the first Tuesday of every month, so mark it on your calendars and bring that pen and paper for more awesome information. So thank you so much, as always, coming on once a month, sharing all of your wonderful knowledge, and we'll see you in another month. Thank you so much
all
for coming
on. Thank you for having me on. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Steve. That was wonderful.
All right. Sorry we couldn't. It looks like we got a couple of calls there, and we had one a question that was emailed to me. We'll try to get those answered, or you can email Steve at his website. Again, heritagechef.com. All righty, it's now time for our chicken trivia contest. We're running very short on time. It is brought to you by eggcartons.com. We have an awesome prize for the lucky winner today, an awesome egg scale. I think this thing retails about $30. It'll be shipped directly to your front door if you know the answer to, the, of course, the following question. Real quick, we're going to take caller number six. Call number six at 347-637-3237. If you know the answer to the following question, what breed of chickens, you've probably heard this one before, what breed of chickens has black skin and bones? What breed of chickens have black skin and bones? That's what we're looking for. 347-637-3237. Caller number six is going to walk away, if you have the correct answer, with this awesome egg scale. It's a vintage type egg scale, remanufactured. It's awesome, very popular with our fans, and from eggcartons.com. You can go and see it there. Go to eggcartons.com, click on egg scale, and you'll see it. It's awesome. It's accurate, so you can weigh those beautiful backyard eggs and know whether you're getting grade A, whether you're getting extra large, jumbos, large, mediums. How cool is that? You can mark them on the mark them on the egg carton and give them to your friends. So a great egg scale from our friends at eggcartons.com. They sell an awful lot of these. And you want to make sure you tune in tomorrow. A brand new garden show. It's going to be awesome. You're going to be pleased. Right down your alley, Pat, and you're not going to want to miss tomorrow's show. Bring your pen and paper, of course, for tomorrow's show. Great show tomorrow, Thursday, Poultry Today with Dr. McCray, and another fun Friday. We are really looking forward to this week. So let me get down here to caller number six. Caller number six calling in from area code 214. You're live on the air with Andy and Pat. State your name and tell us where you're calling from, please.
Oh, this is Dave calling from Texas.
Hey, Dave.
Hey,
from
Dave.
Texas. Good to hear from you. Did you get any of those storms real quick yesterday?
Early in the morning, about 5, they blew through, mainly lightning and about 2 inches here.
Okay, very good. The question today is, many of you know this, lit up like a Christmas tree here on our switchboard. What breed of chicken has black skin and bones?
I'd say a silky, maybe.
That is a silky. Silky maybe is correct.
Right.
So congratulations, and you've won yourself an awesome egg scale from eggcartons.com. Our friend over there, Scott, with eggcartons.com. Send us via email. Don't send it through Facebook, if you would, Dave. Send it via email. chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, chickenwhisperer@chickenwhisperer.net, name, address, that's shipping address, name, shipping address, and phone number, and they are really quick with their shipping, so we'll get that information to Scott, and we want to thank eggcartons.com for sponsoring every Tuesday and delivering some really really awesome prizes that our listeners love. I want to thank Steve Pope for coming on. What a cool show. Pat, thank you for coming on. And all of our chickeneers in the chat room. Loaded today, over 50 people in the chat room and hundreds others listening live throughout the country and throughout the world. And we thank you very much for that, whether it be on iTunes, podcast.com, Zoom.com, or, of course, our friends at blogtalkradio.com. And we'll see you tomorrow right here at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. Pat, take it away.
Okay, thanks, Mr. This was an extraordinary show. We had as our special guest Steve Pope. He is the heritage chef, and for Frank Reese's Good
Pat.
Shepherd Ranch in Kansas. So thank you, Steve, so much for coming.
Let me interrupt you very, very quick before we run out of time,
okay.
So we don't run out of time for this. Today's secret password, folks. Today's secret password is beak. Today's secret password is beak. So that's what you, and of course we'll post this on our Facebook page. Wanted to get that out there.
Can
officially.
You spell that?
Huh?
Beak?
Yep, beak.
B-E-A-K.
Correct.
Beak. Okay, today's secret password is beak.
Perfect. Okay,
Andy
thanks.
Snyder, appreciation to you for bringing us all together. And
woo!
Of course, where would we be if it weren't for without you and the beaks? Anyway, you got me tickled now. Appreciation to our chat room chicken ears and all our listeners for clucking along. And, of course, blessings to all. We love you all so much. And may the flock be with you evermore. God bless everybody.
Ha 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 ha